Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's Sunday, April 20th, 2014. Time for your Gitmo Nation Media Assassination Episode 610.
This is No Agenda.
From south of the border, outside of FEMA Region 6, coming to you from Mexico, kind of. In the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley, where I'm not here either, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
That's right. You told us to go. You voted. Kind of.
Yeah, I think they voted for us to take a day off.
Happy 420, everybody. Let me get that in right away.
Yeah, 420. Coincidence.
Yeah, I think not. Exactly.
Coincidence? I think not.
All right, so this is, I requested, actually, Miss Mickey requested if I could request to have the day off. And so right now I am in Mexico. Probably being gang raped. I hope, if I'm lucky.
I hope, yeah, right.
So really appreciate that. But even more appreciation goes out to David Ramsey.
Ramsey Kane.
Ramsey Kane, yes. Is he a sir? He should be.
Yeah, well, if he's not, he will be.
Yeah.
No, Ramsey Kane, who's our the CD guy, he does No Agenda CD. And he's a clip collector, and he's produced one of these before, and he's great. What can I say? I mean, he's like the perfect guy for this, and he likes doing it.
Yeah, he really does know how to pull out the nuggets of stuff that. Oops, sorry, things are falling down here in Mexico. When you listen, if you go to noagendacd.com, we can hear all the work he's doing, and it's his boss, I think, who makes him do this.
His boss is his boss is a big fan, and he's totally behind him, and so he can do it at work. And so he does it at work when he has the time. He has work to do too, so he doesn't just do it all day, but it would be nice.
Okay, so now how are we doing this?
We're going to play. He's got a clip show that's going to be, I guess, an hour or so, and then we're going to take a break and discuss a couple of things, mainly how people can help us continue doing the show, and then we'll play the second half of the show, and then we'll finish it. We're out of here.
All right. Okay. So I have no idea what he's starting with, but we appreciate it. Here is our special episode 610 clip show. So annoying when they do this. More Agenda 21 crap for you coming up.
Troubling health news. Officials in North Carolina are investigating a deadly outbreak of E. coli infection that's been traced to a county fair. At least 61 people, including 36 children, have now become ill. One child's died.
So this county fair thing, we've been tracking this for a while. Remember, it was the new swine flu, the new bird flu. I actually went back and looked at our show notes. I just did a search on search.nashownotes.com. And lo and behold, episode 433, the new swine flu, H3N2, was 16 cases. People picked it up at county fairs. They're trying to get rid of these county fairs.
One of the things that almost every county fair, for one thing, you can buy meat on the hoof.
Yeah, that's going to end.
So that's going to, they hate that. They don't like you, anybody in the public, actually buying an animal and then going through the system, the slaughtering and then the butchering system, and then getting, you know, some really high quality hand raised meat for $2 and $3 a pound, which is what it amounts to when you're done.
No, we'll have none of that.
Which is about 1/3 the price of the grass fed crap. So, so that's got to go.
Well, this is how they're going to get rid of it. They're just going to make it. So they already tried the swine flu bit. That didn't work. Now, this is how many episodes ago? We're at 53. So that's 20 episodes ago. So what is that, 3 months?
Yeah.
Something like that, 3 months ago? So that got no traction. So now it's like, oh, no, the E. coli. Yeah. No, that's coming from county fairs. And a child died.
It's amazing.
Well, you know what that means, don't you?
Oh, won't somebody please think of the children?
Got to think of the children. Child will die.
Yeah, the county fairs are under attack. Sure, everything's all our classic institutions, except you know, being a slave to some dork, are under attack. It's just the country's under attack culturally, And I think it all relates to Agenda 21. I took my printout. I have a printout of Agenda 21.
Yeah, it's which is like, pretty big.
It's like the size of the room.
Did you eat up a printer cartridge, a whole ink cartridge?
You burn a cartridge and reams of paper. So, but it, the thing is dense with this weird stuff. Dense.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a special feature on Agenda 21. Not in a long-term way, but a short-term bits. I'm just going to read sections of it every once in a while.
Okay. Will that be after the Scholastic special?
And it'll be right after the thing on education. Yeah, actually, I've been working on this clip show.
Yeah. It'll be ready when? End of the year?
It's half over. It's half done. I have an hour and 10 minutes. Yeah,
so is half the year. So that's what I mean. It'll be done.
But what I've done is I've listened to all the clips from, you know, all the shows from since the beginning. And there's a lot of stuff that we've come up with over the years that we've long since forgotten, but it's still interesting in retrospect. But this is not a retrospective show.
But let me tell you how crazy we are about our passion for doing this program. So yesterday, beautiful day here in at the Hilltop Watchtower, and Bobby Eden is over. And I'm not quite sure. And yet this must have happened when I was sick or something. And I'm kind of back at like 90-95% now. Mickey made some kind of like appointment that she was going to photograph Bobby. And I'm like, you know, and these are like real good shots, if you know what I mean. And so I'm just kind of there, I'm like enjoying the show. And then I get a text from John. He's like, "Oh, you got to turn on C-SPAN 1 right now, douchebag fest. It's the correspondence dinner. You got to watch it." I'm like, "Dude, you know, I'm watching a photo shoot with Bobby Eden, official porn star of the show." He's like, "You can always watch that. Go watch the show." And I did. How sad is that? I went inside and like they're outside taking pictures.
It's pretty compelling.
It was like,
well, I mean, both. I mean, you had a double. You could have. Did you DVR Bobby Eden?
No, but there's. I had the pictures, but I could have seen all this live stuff happening.
Oh yeah,
and it got worse because I was like, okay, you know. So then I'm like, I'll go get some meat for hamburgers, and I come back and they're both in the hot tub. Huh. I'm like, I missed that.
Did you jump in or what?
I can, but yeah, it's like, you were hungry now and they get out.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like,
oh. Oh, you know, these things come and go.
I'm a loser.
But he said something that I thought was kind of interesting. Because, of course, evil Assad is turning off the electricity. When you have no electricity, you can't charge your cell phone. So how would you do that, John, if you were out there and you're in Syria, in Hama, and you've got Assad killing you? How would you charge your cell phone, man?
Well, I mean, I would sneak downtown where there is power and plug in, or I would find somebody with a laptop with some juice left, or I would get a solar panel if I could, but I don't think that's a little too late for that.
Those things suck. I've tried those.
I would use my car.
Check this out.
Problem with them. Batteries, because our battery is running out and no electric to recharge your equipment. So for phone calls, we create a new way. It's actually a simple way to recharge your phone. We use a glass of water with two batteries, Duracell or something else. It's already exists everywhere. We use it to keep the batteries in the water for 1 hour or 30 minutes, then you put the USB adapters inside the water and start charge.
How about that, huh?
That's bull crap. So it sounds like he's saying buttocks.
You put your buttocks in the water?
Now, what is he saying? I don't, you know, I can barely understand this guy. Sounds like he's saying buttocks constantly. What is he saying?
He
dropped a battery in a bottle of water and the next thing you know, it's charged? No, what is he saying?
What he says is, you take a glass of water, you drop two Duracell batteries in there for about half an hour to an hour, and then you plug in a USB cable into your phone and put the USB that normally goes into your computer into the glass of water.
This is bogus. There's no way this works.
This is what I was like, really? I mean, so if this guy is saying this, then he's full of bullcrap on everything else.
Yeah, I would think.
Can someone try this experiment? Maybe it works.
Why bother trying it? It's bull crap.
I knew you'd love it. Like, really? You can do that? So he throws two batteries. Take two batteries and call me in the morning. He throws two batteries in a glass of water. Wait, wait 30 minutes. Then just drop your USB cable in and it'll start charging.
Nice. Unbelievable.
And the guy on PBS, like, oh, that's great. Great idea.
The guy on PBS is an idiot.
Yeah. Doesn't that kind of show you what else is going on PBS? Please.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the clip of the day already.
Already? Ah, wow. I don't know.
Is the clip of the day. I mean, you can't beat that. That's the most idiotic thing I've ever heard. And you got a guy from PBS lapping it up like a moron, like a puppy.
Really? Oh, that's so ingenious. You're so inventive. So smart. So good. I did find something else interesting that I didn't know. Because, you know, it's like, you know, I'm in Illinois, right? And this is Gitmo Nation Central. This is HQ, run by Rahm Emanuel now. I was like, you know, so what did Barack Obama do for you guys when he was senator? And most people didn't even know that he was the senator. And do you know how what happened that made him win the senatorial race?
In Illinois?
Yeah.
There was a long article about it in the New Yorker. I think it had most of the details. What?
So he was running against the incumbent, Jack Ryan. And Jack Ryan, if you Google him, he's...
Right.
He's a cute guy. You know, he has the whole look. Everything's perfect. And he was ahead in all the polls. This is 2004, of course. And... Jack Ryan at the time was married to Jeri Ryan, who plays 7 of 9 on Star Trek Voyager.
Right.
Now, this is where it gets creepy because we mentioned the similarity between Obama and Tuvok.
Yeah, that is funny now that you mentioned that part. Yeah, this is all outlined in this article. Go on.
So they're getting close. During Ryan's primary run, the Chicago Tribune and WLS Radio, I guess radio, maybe TV, wanted the records released of their divorce in 1999. And it turns out that this guy was taking her to sex clubs and saying, hey, sit here and blow me and let everybody watch. And that ruined his entire race. It's like, oh, wow. How does that work, huh? Do we call that a
coincidence? I think not.
Like, wow. I didn't know that that's how Obama actually won.
Yeah, I recall all that. Yeah, it was discussed in great detail.
And also, many people...
Ben, there's more than just the blowjobs, by the way. You know, there's a lot of costuming and
I have the actual document, and it says a sex act. It doesn't say what it was.
Yeah, so, that's what it means, yeah.
I don't know. But a couple of people have been working out in health clubs in Chicago for, you know, all their life, essentially. And one place where the president also used to go and work out, his name was Barry. Everyone called him Barry until he became senator. Then all of a sudden it was Barack.
Yeah, no, it was always Barry.
How come we don't call him Barry Obama?
Well, because he doesn't want to be called Barry.
Hmm. Okay.
Because people like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, you tell me. My theories, it just thinks it has more of an ethnic sound and it sounds more distinctive. And
it's marketing.
It's all much better. Yeah, it's all marketing because, I mean, Barry, just not Barry.
Yeah, right.
Well, no, there's a resolution in Congress. Now, resolution is not a law, but it is, I guess it's to make everyone feel good so they can have a drink and say, well, good job, Joe. Good day at the office. The resolution in Congress says that climate change is forcing women into prostitution.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love this one.
So
there's an upside to everything.
Yeah, so here it is, the resolution. Whereas women will disproportionately face harmful impacts from climate change, insecure women with limited socioeconomic resources may be vulnerable to situations such as sex work, transactional sex, which, by the way, is called marriage. Okay, let me just define that for you. And early marriage to put them at risk of HIV. Oh, you're going to be a whore and have AIDS.
because of climate change. This is insane. Okay, this is just insane.
I love this thing. I'm glad you brought it up because I forgot about it. Yeah, you're going to be a whore with AIDS thanks to global warming.
Woohoo! Now, okay, so let's just follow the money for a moment. And this is, I think, where this guy messes up, because I think he's lying, and I believe, because you were much more involved at the time, because, of course, what this really, the way I see it, is the whole climate change thing, not about saving the Earth. No one gives a crap about you or the Earth. These guys don't care. It's about taking your money in the form of a tax, a carbon tax, and it will be for everything. Like, oh, you talk too much. You know, cut, we'll have to tax that. Australia now has this, so it's an actual tax. And from what I understand, the idea is to take that money and then go help the poor black children in Africa. But, of course, we do that with our American companies. We're not going to give them the big, giant check. Like, congratulations, kids. Here's your check.
Some money.
Here's your money. No. You give it to American companies like Halliburton and Bechtel. And you give it to all the big guys. This is what we do. We have war for the same reason. Okay? We go and shoot up Iraq. Why? Is we can go rebuild it. Yay! Good work, everybody. So here's where this guy screws up.
And there's actually a historical precedent. We used to have a huge acid rain problem in this country. We created essentially a cap and trade system.
Is that true? We had a cap and trade system for acid rain?
Yeah.
Where we capped the amount of sulfur dioxide being emitted from these smokestacks, brought that cap down over years, and allowed companies to sell their emission rights between each other. So a company that was really good at reducing their emissions could sell that remaining block to another company that needed more time. It was one of the most successful programs in American history. It was put on the table and passed by a Republican president, the first George Bush, Bush Sr., and it solved the problem, or it largely solved the problem, at a cost far below what even the best estimates at the time were.
So you're the expert here, John. How is this cap and trade not the same cap and trade that is being discussed, where I believe all the money is and what this whole thing is about?
Right. And now there's evidence that the whole acid rain thing was a hoax.
No, you don't say.
And so but I remember the era. It was everything, 60 Minutes reports, and they would show some old statue in Italy with its the face was dissolved like
from acid rain.
And the buildings were all falling apart from acid rain.
Wait a minute, I gotta find that statue in Italy.
Acid
face
rain.
Eaten off acid rain. Like, I'm sure it's on.
Once
Google.
They put the cap and trade in, all these stories ended. The success of the whole thing was to get this in place, and it then became some sort. It became systemized. I think right now, because there's such resistance. 8% is a lot of people that are, and apparently if I'm categorizing it, to get the number up to 8% by putting me in the dismissive category it indicates that they're freaked. So here's what the goal is. You get the cap and trade, you get the carbon tax, you get all that in, nothing really changes. And we point this out, we've pointed it out before, and it should be pointed out the same thing with acid rain. Cap and trade is an insincere version of a solution, because if you think there's a problem, you cap. You don't trade.
Right.
You just say, we got too much of this, too much of that, we can't do it anymore. You cap it. That's what air pollution laws did. No, you're getting fined if this comes out of that smokestack. You can't trade the pollution for some other place that's not polluting. You know, pollution doesn't – the general pollution laws don't have cap and trade. Cap and trade doesn't change anything. It just creates a new system of passing money around. The idea, it seems to me, is to get a cap and trade in place, and then you just stop talking about it, and then 10 years down the road you say, man, that cap and trade worked like a champ. The global warming is over.
Yeah, and I'll pile on with you, and I'll say the reason why they need to do it now is because we're going into – a little mini ice age. We are going into a true global cooling, and they need to do it now before otherwise you can't do that. You can't claim victory in a couple of years.
Whereas, no, you have to get this done.
Yeah. So we had our dinner party on Monday night, and
right. We took talked a little bit about this on the show.
We did.
But not much. We talked most of it after the show.
Well, and this is one of those rare occasions where we actually had an off-topic discussion after the show, which I would say lasted for about 45 minutes, quite a record for us. And we had already spoken for over 2.5 hours.
Shower up afterwards.
And mainly because I was now cooking for a total of 6 people. And these are our friends here in Austin. We have Russell, the brain scientist. We have his lovely wife, Jennifer, the architect. We have Lori, the artist, and her husband, Mark, the rock and roller, who also does investments and accounting. And
they're all Obama bots.
The total Obama bots. And Mickey and I concluded after the evening, which it went until past midnight.
It was a good evening.
It was a good evening. We concluded that we are probably their wacky friends.
Those two, wow. Have you ever been to their house?
You got
to
go hang out.
Unbelievable. What they say is crazy.
I got to tell you. So first of all, I had asked you for advice. I said, what am I going to cook? 6 people. I don't think I can do this. And you went, you're so lovely. You went, this is easy. No problem. You're doing beef bourguignon. I'm like, what? And so first of all, I did not sell this as beef bourguignon.
I like your imitation of me. I'm very gentle.
I wrote it. I wrote it down. I wrote down exactly how you told me to do this.
Yeah.
And which is quite funny. In fact, I will give you just the first few lines. And I named it something different because they said, "Oh, what are we having for dinner?" And I said, "We're having double dip recession slave stew."
Yes, you have. Right, which I think is a great name for this dish.
It is. And here's how you said it. You get 5 pounds of meat, chuck steaks, 1.5-inch cubes, and this is the cheapest meat you can find. I mean, I'm talking cheap, cheap, cheap. Then you get your cast iron pot. You make this thing hot. I mean, fucking hot. You're going to put the meat in there, and it's just going to be like, it's just going to be smoking. It's outrageous. You have to open the doors and the windows. This is nuts. It's caramelizing. Don't touch it. That's kind of how you told me to do it.
Yeah, kind of.
And so I had to make an investment. And
it makes a lot of smoke.
The investment was...
If done right.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, the investment was getting a Dutch oven, which I didn't have. So we went to Bed Bath & Beyond. After you and I...
Those are not true Dutch ovens, but go on.
Well, no,
You went to Bed... Did you buy the one that we saw on the online?
You know what? There were three different kinds, and the one that we saw online, there was kind of... there were two other choices. One was the French kind, which was like $300.
Yeah, they're a little pricey. What? That's and usually because they're enameled.
They were all enameled. Maybe a different. Maybe. Yeah,
oh, okay. Well, you know, I always go with the one I use is real is American cast iron. It's the big heavy duty cast iron that needs to be cured.
Yeah. So I got the one that Emeril sells.
Oh, okay.
I liked it. Yeah. So it's 6 quarts, and that's
perfect.
Yeah, we needed.
All purpose.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can cook a lot of meals in that thing.
Now, and I'm really going to get into this because this was a dynamite thing to do. I followed your instructions, although I did something really stupid, which I think may have contributed to the success of the meal. Because, you know, what you do, the whole secret really is you're throwing in a bottle of wine, and that's really the secret to it. And that's just going to, although you have a secret ingredient, which is the cooking sake. I thought that was a... that's a very cool thing to do kind of after your second hour. But I had also asked you what wine I should serve at the meal. And you had said, you had suggested a Côte du Rhône 2009, but 2010 or 2011 would do. And so I had found a Côte du Rhône, and I think it was not cheap. It was like $17 or something, 2000.
It's expensive for a Côte du Rhône, but yeah.
Well, so the mistake is I wound up pouring that into the stew.
You know, technically, when you meet, beef bourguignon, of course, is a variation on stew. The French version is made in Burgundy, and it's technically supposed to be made with a Burgundy wine, and I suggested a Pinot.
Yeah.
And you used instead a Syrah, or actually a Grenache Syrah blend, whatever's in it. Nobody knows what's in it after Côte du Rhône.
Yeah.
So that would move, it would shift the flavor profile substantially.
But it worked.
Well, yeah, and actually any wine will work. Yeah, I've cooked those things up with white wine.
But and what's great about this is the kitchen is clean when everyone shows up. It's just clean. Yeah, everything's all the messes cleared.
The thing's sitting there. It's just bubbling along. John, they could not believe. They're like, you're full of crap. You've cooked before. You've done this before. I said, no, never. First time. And I gave you full credit. They all know who you are, of course. I gave you full credit.
For coaching you.
No, I said, I said, right down to buying the Dutch oven today. So I was honest about it. But I didn't say it was beef bourguignon. I just said it was double dip recession slave stew.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Hey, I need to make good, my friend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I felt so bad about that Matt Lauer thing with Gerard Butler and the movie connection with North Korea. I felt like really, really bad.
Why? Because you got Lauer fired?
No. Well, I mean, so we have long since established, for those of you who are new to the program, this is kind of a good way to ease into it. We'll show you kind of how we think and how the world actually works, the world of news. We have long established that most news reports, certainly on the big networks, are pretty much always to promote a movie. Because
it's just a coincidence that we keep running into.
I don't know if it's just a coincidence. I think not. That's where all the fun seems to be at the movies. You know, you got the hot actresses, politicians like to hang out with them. There's always news surrounding movies. And this seems to be no secret in movie land and in television land, in news land. In fact, Robert Redford was on Good Morning America with George Stephanopoulos, who, of course, is a political operative for the Democrats and obviously worked in the Clinton White House.
And is that ABC, coincidentally?
And at ABC, and the news director of ABC is married to one of Obama's top advisors, not Valerie Jarrett, but up there in the high echelons. And so Robert Redford is promoting his movie, and this is just to ease you into what I'm about to explain with North Korea.
My wife and I watched the movie over the weekend, completely engrossing. And it seems to me, at least, that you packed a lot of your passions into a single movie. Political commitment, love and family life, journalism. I was just wondering, where did the spark come from on this one?
Well, first of all, that's a great description. You ought to get on the marketing team. When I was younger...
There you go. You ought to get on the marketing team. No, he is on the marketing team. Now, in this case, there's no real tie-in. Usually there's a tie-in, particularly with ABC and Disney movies. But in this case, I think that's why Robert Redford said you ought to get on the marketing team.
Yeah, because they need somebody.
Because he knows, this is an independently financed movie. It's Sony International Pictures or whatever, which is that is actually quite independent. But still, you could see a CBS tie-in, but it's not there. Now, back to the Matt Lauer and Gerard Butler, who is a producer on this movie. Olympus has fallen. Is that what it is? Olympus has fallen. Olympus has fallen. And the premise of this movie is the North Koreans are terrorists, and somehow they've come down from North Korea.
Somehow that happened.
Yeah. Somehow
they transmogrified.
Yeah. And I had caught this clip, but I'd forgotten to play it. And then, John brought up the topic, and I was like, oh, I couldn't find the clip, and the chat room found it for me. So I have to kind of regroup. Because we didn't actually play the entire clip, and then I want to put a couple of things together for you. So once again, the movie is Olympus Has Fallen, and this is Matt Lauer on the... so this is NBC, but of course what is interesting is what you're about to hear and the tie-ins with the politics and the movie business. So let's listen to it one more time.
Gerard Butler, welcome back. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
You got clout. Let me tell you why you have clout, all right? This movie is about not giving anything away here. The North Koreans are the terrorists here. They take over the White House and they capture the president. And you have arranged, just as you're promoting this movie, to have the North Koreans make all kinds of strange gestures toward the United States threatening nuclear war. Yeah. How did you do that?
Well, it wasn't so much me. We have a very powerful publicity department.
So this was very funny. And by the way, the movie is on Millennium Pictures. Millennium Pictures is run by a very interesting guy. The producer is Avi Lerner. And Avi Lerner, he was a film distributor in Israel. And he wound up basically becoming the go-to guy for all big action action movies. And so this, of course, is one of those action movies. And his initial financing came from Blockbuster as a part of the Viacom family. So most of his movies are financed directly or indirectly by Viacom. Now let's hear the rest of this little interview.
He said, Angela, just make some noise, you know, say some ridiculous things, and then we called Dennis Rodman.
And you got him involved?
Buddy, do us a favor.
You're pulling in all the strings, aren't you?
Okay, so that, of course, is a joke, but is it really? Because Dennis Rodman was in North Korea, and here's where the interesting research comes from. What was he doing in North Korea? Who was he working for?
Okay. Well, Vice. I know one thing, which was that his lead, because let's face it, the North Koreans don't know who Dennis Rodman is, but they do know who the Harlem Globetrotters are.
Well, yes, yes.
And so he got in, but it looked like it was just him, but then we discovered it's the Globetrotters, because I guess, you know, I'm sure they put on a show there. Okay. Must have been fascinating.
So the Globetrotters, which is owned by a majority stake, owned by Disney. I agree with you. I think that that was set up by Disney, and Disney is thinking about opening Disneyland North Korea. However, Rodman was there for working for Vice. And Vice is used to be kind of like an independent magazine. But I got some research. Do you know who owns Vice?
Now, who owns Vice, Adam?
Viacom.
Since when?
They bought. This was a deal that was done, I think, in 2007, and it's completely under the radar. And Viacom has been. So they made two investments. One was VBS.TV, which is Vice. And along with Flux, remember the Flux network that was supposed to be like their answer to MySpace after they didn't get that deal. So you don't remember it because, of course, it was stupid and Flux went nowhere. But that's when quietly they invested in the magazine and built this entire Vice television outfit. And I've always wondered where these guys getting the money from.
Yeah, you mentioned that before because it's like they're doing a lot of stuff that looks expensive.
Yeah, and they've got budget. And so then when Gerard Butler says this...
You know, say some ridiculous things, and then we call Dennis Rodman.
And you got him involved?
Buddy, do us a favor.
You're pulling in all the strings, aren't you?
It's not a joke. It's true. It's obvious. It's the same freaking company.
Well, you know, Sumner Redstone is one character.
He's a slick dude. I don't even think he...
I met him.
Yeah?
He is... He's a character. Let's put it that way. But he is he just seems like this tough guy. And yeah. Curiously, where do you think I met him? In South Korea.
Really? He was setting it up back then. That guy is good.
I didn't think about it till now.
Hey, speaking of which, so you have to look at this. Are you looking at Chemonix? It's a commercial company. It's not a nonprofit. This is what's crazy. It is a for-profit company, Chemonix.com. Actually started by a Dutch guy, and they just got a new CEO, Susie Mudge.
Yeah, I'm looking up. I think Susie Mudge has a LinkedIn profile there for some reason.
Susie, I looked at her, obviously. I didn't find...
She didn't have a wiki page.
No, she's not very interesting. She's been in the organization for 20 years, so she screwed her way to the top, obviously.
Well, look at her.
Yeah, well, it took her a long time.
And
for good reason.
So what are you going to do? I don't know. What about Susie? She looks like she's good for a roll in the hay. No, I don't know. Come on. What can it hurt?
Hello, misogynist, no agenda for you, everybody. Happy to be here once again. Anyway, to wind up the war on crazy, here's the craziest person of all, Congresswoman Diana DeGette. And this is a great piece of video where she's talking about banning the magazine clips, as she calls them, high-capacity magazine clips, But her reasoning behind it is rather strange. And I want you to listen with me, John.
Just very briefly, to your last question, what's the efficacy of banning these magazine clips? I will tell you, these are ammunition. They're bullets. So the people who have those now, they're going to shoot them. And so if you ban them in the future, the number of these high-capacity magazines is going to decrease dramatically over time. Because the bullets will have been shot and there won't be any more available.
Oh, what an idiot. This is unbelievable. What a clown. This is like that woman that was on the Chamber of Commerce that we had a clip of a couple of years ago who says, well, I would think that the laws in Arizona really shouldn't be as harsh as they are because it's not a border state. It's like these people are, this is a moron. Who is this woman? What's her name?
Congresswoman Diana DeGette, D-E-G-E-T.
D-E-G-E-T.
And she believes that these clips, like, they're not rechargeable or something. You can't, like, put more bullets in there. You buy them packed with bullets, kind of like a candy bar, and you
use
it.
Yeah, and then when you shoot them, then you got to make, because now you have to.
Throw it away.
You throw it away. Although she doesn't, she looks like an idiot. No offense, lady, but you don't look that bright.
Maybe she can work for. And this is not work that I've done, but I figured I'd play a little bit of just the pertinent piece of this clip. And this is Max Kaiser, who I think we both like in general. He has some funny stuff. But actually, it's not Max. It's his researcher. What's her name? Shelby, something or other. And
I'll just relent.
Well, she does. I mean, I could have just explained it, but it's cool how she does it. She, of course, we talked about the $378 billion that Wachovia Bank laundered from Mexican drug cartels. And of course, Wachovia Bank is now Wells Fargo. And she connects two dots here, which are absolutely astounding and worth listening to.
A big U.S. bank laundered billions from Mexico's murderous drug gangs. So this is the Guardian News, and they've done a deep investigation into the story that we've covered before, which is Wachovia Bank. And they were found to have laundered $378 billion, or 30% of Mexico's GDP in this time, of drug money.
The cocaine.
Of cocaine, yes. $378
billion. $378
billion
laundered through Wachovia, which of course now is owned by Warren Buffett's company, Berkshire Hathaway. And of course, he's never talked about that either. And it's a huge part of the Mexican GDP. And the bank paid a fine.
Well, it's $378 billion in money laundering through the Casas de Cambio. And they paid a $110 million fine, or less than 2% of 1 year's
profit. Just, I got to interrupt. The Casas de Cambio, I think, isn't that just where you go change your money? The Casas de Cambio? Isn't that just the exchange place where you go and take your dollars and turn them into pesos or vice versa?
Well,
I think that's what it is. Well, you look that up while we continue, because this is really good.
Profits from Wachovia. Wachovia is now owned by Wells Fargo. Warren Buffett owns 6.5% of it. But from this article, there's a very interesting point that I want to note that relates to this whole financial catastrophe. First of all, Wachovia started really getting involved in these Casa de Cambio in 2004, just when the violence really started getting extreme in the Mexican drug wars. In April and May of 2007, 3 years later, Wachovia, as a result of increasing interest and pressure from the U.S. Attorney General's office, began to close its relationship with some of the Casas de Cambio. And then in July of 2007, all of Wachovia's remaining 10 Mexican Casa de Cambio clients operating through London suddenly stopped. July 2007. What happened in August of 2007?
The world credit crunch.
So there you go. So they go on to further extrapolate that once the Mexican drug cartel said, well, you know what, screw it, we're not going to launder our money through you anymore. That was the only liquid assets that were coming into the banks. And then right after that, Wachovia and all these other banks started borrowing money from the Federal Reserve because there was no money. It's all drug money. The whole thing is drug money.
Everything.
Legalize drugs.
Yes. No, because then the whole thing melts down. You can't.
It's already
legalize
melted
it.
Down. Now that it's melted down, legalize drugs, and we don't have to deal with this anymore.
No, because then the. Well, okay. All right. And then you and I will stop doing this show and go into growing. So while we're on that, let me tell you a little bit about your Department of Terrorism, Department of Homeland Security, as I continue to follow the sexual harassment lawsuit. Two affidavits have come out, John, which I'd like to share with you.
Oh, good.
This is way, way unsafe for the children. So two affidavits. I, name blacked out, being over the age of 18, make the following statement under penalty of perjury. I have no personal relationship, blah, 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 blah. This is against Suzanne Barr. Suzanne Barr, who was purportedly Lucy Napolitano's girlfriend, who was brought in and sexually, with the other douche knucklehead, sexually harassed men at the Department of Homeland Security. On the last workday before Halloween...
By the way, she wasn't qualified for that job to start with, but go on.
On the last workday before Halloween 2009, my duties required me to go to the director's office where several employees were discussing personal Halloween plans. I joined the conversation. Suzanne Barr was also present for part of the conversation. At some point during the conversation, I witnessed Suzanne Barr turn to the senior ICE employee, Tay Johnson, and state, "You a sexy motherfucker!" Then she looked at his crotch and asked, "How long is it anyway?" Several employees laughed nervously. Shortly thereafter, several employees returned to work duties, myself included, and several continued the Halloween conversation. Now let's go to Affidavit B. This one's even better. And this is sworn testimony from people who are saying it's rampant in this Department of Homeland Security. The people who are trying to scare you into submission. I'm over the age of 18, blah, blah, make the following statement under penalty of perjury. I work for Immigration Customs Enforcement in Columbia area, 2009. During late 2009, ICE Director Morton and others, including Suzanne Barr and Ray Palmer, visited Columbia. Bear in mind. During this visit, Suzanne Barr and Ray Palmer were both at a party at the house of the Deputy Chief of Mission of the U.S. Embassy in Columbia, at which I was also present. And as you can imagine, John, it says here, during this party, Barr and Palmer were both drinking heavily. Palmer obtained the BlackBerry of Peter Vincent, another ICE employee, and used it to send lewd messages to Barr. I viewed at least one message, which stated from Palmer, posing as Vincent, to Barr, you ready for the quote?
Go.
"I want to eat the corn out of your shit." During this party, Suzanne Barr approached me and offered to give me a blowjob. This is what's going on in your government, people. To arms, I say. Isn't that stunning? Isn't that just stunning?
Yeah, and why is this not covered at all by NBC, CBS?
Because you can't say...
New York Times.
You can't say eat the corn out of your poop.
You could.
You could say Pussy Riot. We just need to have a band. Hey, everybody, it's the Corn Holios here. It's the Corn Eaters. It's the Corn Poop Eaters.
This is disgusting. And again, you people that listen to our show, they have to ask the question, why are you hearing it on our show?
Why do you have to get this news from a podcast?
Yeah, why do you have to get this news from a podcast? I mean, it's the best podcast in the universe, but still, it shouldn't be the one source of this sort of information.
Mm-mm.
This woman that came on is,
Free Pussy Riot! Free Pussy Riot!
This woman that came on is not only a gay, a lesbian, but she is, she has this new, there's a thing that a lot of them do, they take a lot of androgel, and then they grow mustaches. She had a full mustache.
Wait a minute, what do you take for that?
You take androgel because there's a phenomenon in the gay community, and it's in Wikipedia, it's called lesbian bed death.
Oh my God, John! What have you been doing with your time?
Lesbian bed death. I got a lecture about this. Lesbian bed death seems to happen to gay female couples after they're 2 or 3 months in bed together.
Oh
they
God.
Lose all interest in sex completely, really quickly.
Oh my God, this is
and it's called lesbian bed death. And to fight it, one of the two couples takes testosterone, which has also been in the news for baseball players. And when you take testosterone, you grow a mustache. And normally, women always have a little bit of testosterone, but if you take androgel, which is a pump that you put on you just pump it on yourself and you rub it in, and it goes through your skin. When you take that with any large amount of dosage, you grow the mustache and you become very aggressive sexually.
Well, now, first of all, I want it to be known that after this program, I'm going to call my lesbians and I'm going to get a full firsthand download on the lesbian bed death. I have never heard of this. I've seen it in the Book of Knowledge. And according to the study that Schwartz and Bloomstein did, they concluded that lesbian couples in committed relationships have less sex than any other type of couple, heterosexual, married, heterosexual, cohabitating, or gay male, and generally experience less sexual intimacy the longer the relationship lasts after the question, quote, about how often during the last year of you and your partner had sex relations. Very interesting. So then they take the androgel. Wow, this is... Is that covered by healthcare? Is that part of the female healthcare decisions?
It might well be, as a matter of fact. And that may be the connection that we had at the beginning of the show.
The female health, the women's healthcare decisions. We can't make those. I can't even grow a mustache if I try. My goodness.
Some Andrew.
There's
a lot of this is not being covered. And people are easily distracted by the Free Pussy Riot meme, as you are. But there's more.
I'm not distracted. I've completely deconstructed it.
Meme.
I just love the Aaron Burnett saying pussy. That's all.
Yeah, well, it's just definitely entertaining.
Yeah.
But anyway, so there's something going on here. And you're right. Putin's got nothing to do with this.
Nothing at all. He would kill them.
Care?
He would kill them in a second. This guy doesn't care about them.
No.
But So you take the androgel, you grow a mustache, you become very aggressive sexually, and that rekindles the lovemaking?
As
that
long
the deal?
As one of the two partners is all cranked up on androgel, I think they're great.
Wow.
Juiced up. It's the juice, man. It's the juice. This stuff is the future. testosterone.
So what if I take it? Will I become
It would be great for you.
What do you mean? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? There's nothing wrong with me.
Shut up and take your androgel, slave.
Wow. How should this medicine be used? It comes as a gel to apply to the skin. Oh. So you apply it right to your upper lip and you get, and that's...
You'll put it on your upper lip.
Well, it says it right here.
No, it doesn't say that.
Androgel comes as a gel applied to the skin.
Yeah, not the upper lip.
Where do you apply it?
Specific parts of the body that absorb... through the skin, the chemical you need.
You can apply androgel anywhere, on your shoulders, upper arms, or abdomen, between your chest and your waist. Huh. Be careful not to get testosterone gel in your eyes. Thanks for the advice.
I just grew hair in my eyes!
If you do get testosterone gel in your eyes, wash them right away with warm, clean water. Call a doctor if your eyes become irritated or if you grow hair. Wow. Well, this is fascinating stuff. I'm going to put this in the show notes. Lesbian bed death. Wow.
Lesbian bed
death. I'm putting that right under the Pussy Putin thing and androgel. This is, wow, John, you've trumped me. This is very good stuff. But I am going to talk to my lesbians because they'll know about this for sure.
Oh, yeah. They'll say, oh, yeah. That's a problem. Would you like some androgel, Adam?
Haven't you seen me shaving, bitch? Shut up. Wow. Never heard of that before.
No. Well, Hillary does, so they all do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad you brought up Hillary. This is very, very cool. So, clippity-clop. Actually, I should get her jingle out. Hold on a second. It wasn't a good clippity, by the way. They've moved the carpet in her room there. So now when the door is open, she's almost on the carpet immediately, so you can barely get a clippity-clop out of her. Oops. Sorry. Okay. I didn't want to play that one. I wanted to play clippity-clop.
Jumping the gun.
Clippity-clop. Yeah,
the message is clear.
Jump, clippity-clop. Okay. So here's Hillary with the Italian foreign minister doing one of her little clippity-clop stand-ups.
Our very strong commitment to making a difference in the world and beyond. And on that point, let me congratulate the European Union on its Nobel Peace Prize. Certainly, it's quite remarkable to see how unified and peaceful Europe is.
Oh, well, let's switch over to the BBC.
I want to talk about the general strike in Athens, where it's kind of kicked off, if you will. You can see, there's a firebomb, if you will. but we've seen some tear gas being dropped, of course. What is this? The second, third general strike?
Our peaceful, peaceful Europe there, Hillary. Thanks.
Taxi drivers.
This is fantastic.
Congratulations on your Peace Prize.
Bus drivers, air traffic controllers, and of course the...
There's nothing but explosions and firebombs going off in Athens.
It's not just Athens.
No. He sort of... But this Athens is good.
Germans, Angela Merkel, and the other Eurozone, some of the other Eurozone leaders who are insistent. Wow. There's some rather dramatic shots there with those firebombs. But these other Eurozone leaders insistent that Greece stick to these very tough austerity measures.
In the 21st century, and that did not happen by coincidence. It happened because of the very hard work and dedication of leaders and citizens across Europe. For us, it's a great validation. Well,
what planet are you on? Horrible woman.
Well, if you haven't noticed, they don't show any of this crap going on to the American audiences. So she's just playing to the American audience.
And this was a mistake. I mean, this was supposed to be like a nice little morning chat show where they're just showing a top shot camera of the police. And all of a sudden you see these Molotov cocktails flying through. And they're literally surprised, like, oh, that's a firebomb. Oh, well. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well, what should we do?
So the point that I'm trying to make here, which is that is a distraction to what actually was a key point that people missed. Buzzkill Jr. caught it immediately. And then when I heard it, as soon as he said it, I said, oh, geez, yes. And that's this comment here, which came just before the Libya, which is the clip, Obama means what he says.
Okie dokie, hold on.
People, not everybody agrees with some of the decisions I've made. But when it comes to our national security, I mean what I say.
Which implies that he doesn't mean what he says about anything else.
hey, Buzzkill Jr. That's right, it's only that one. Everything
means
else.
What he say. Yeah, when you go out here and say, I mean what I say about this. I mean what I say about this. It has all kinds of implications, and nobody caught that except.
Words, you matter.
That's like when someone says, do you want me to tell you the truth? I usually say, no, please continue to bullshit me like you've been doing for the past 20 years of my life. And you hear that all the time, right? I'm going to tell you the truth now. I mean, honestly, when someone says that, honestly, and I can't help but say, no, please. Please give me the dishonest version like everything else you've been telling me. Don't give me honesty now. I don't like your honesty. That's exactly what that was. Yeah, good catch by Buzzkill Jr. Good catch. Good catch.
Oh, I do have this one clip we should play, though, just out of curiosity. He makes this weird noise every once in a while, and I have a good clip of it. And he does it just more than a few times in the speech. Oh. But listen to Chuck Hagel makes a sound.
I'll hear about this, I'm sure, at a hearing next week, but I think it's relevant to your question.
Were you producing again?
No, I swear to God, did nothing to sweeten that clip.
No. That comes out of his pie hole?
Yes.
No, let me
yes.
listen. No. Let me
I'll hear about
again.
This, I'm sure, at a hearing next week, but I think
no. That sounds like Homer Simpson's in his head. No. And this happens more than once?
Yeah, it's not as loud as this one. No.
Wait a minute. This
he
is
makes
not
a squeaking sound.
That's not a squeaking sound. That's a whole other human being inside of him. Let me hear it one more time. That sounds so produced, John. And I believe you.
Wait, let me stop you right now. I'm telling you the truth.
No, I trust you and believe you. I have no reason to doubt you. You've never steered me wrong.
If you went back and picked this off C-SPAN, you'd get it off of there yourself.
I'll hear about this, I'm sure, at a hearing next week, but I think it's relevant to your question.
He's got a donkey up there.
It's weird, isn't
it? Wow.
Here's another screwy thing. So, you're familiar with the show The View.
Yeah, I don't watch it.
No, you don't have to watch it because it's terrible, but they've decided to kind of up the ante a little bit with, better guests.
Uh-huh.
So they brought in the guy from Israel, I guess, and play this is what they use for the teaser, open the show with the crowd going wild.
Who's the guy from Israel?
It wasn't Netanyahu, it was some other guy.
Israeli Ambassador Michael Oren has a grim warning to America about how Iran's nuclear program is aimed right at Israel and could drag the U.S. into a world war that'll set the entire Middle East on fire.
I love it. I love it. Hey, everybody, we could be done. World War III might start at any moment. He's, we've got Iran pointed right at Israel. Please welcome the ambassador. Fantastic.
That is like the Dvorak Curry Consulting Company that took over.
That is exactly, you know, that it's pretty much win, lose, or drone without the
jingle.
Yeah, for those of you who have who've never heard it, it would go like this.
Win, lose, or drone.
That's right. We welcome to The View the guy who's about to get a hellfire up his butt. My friend, you're a loser on
win, lose, or drone.
Here it comes. Woohoo! Something like that.
Yeah, perfect.
That's good. Well, there you go. Someone's listening to the show.
And, of course, Netherlands, by its, we're in an Airbnb right now. As we, you know, that's our new thing. Why ever stay in a hotel ever again? Which is really...
Because they're going to outlaw Airbnb?
I think the opposite is going to happen. I think
they already did it in New York City.
Oh yeah, sure. The government may. Okay, let's step back for a second. Here's the future of our world, and we're seeing this with Uber, and we're seeing with Airbnb. You're going to see more of this. The world's economy is going to run on I'd call them credibility market exchanges or something like that. So with Airbnb. You're very much like Yelp, only Yelp got pretty compromised, but I think you can still, you know, I think you actually follow some people still on Yelp. But you take Airbnb, you look at the reviews, and you decide, you know, if you want to stay in this place, and you can always negotiate the price, which is kind of cool. But you also, you have a lot of power, so there are a couple things that weren't right here, and we called up and said, hey man, you know, do you want a shitty review from us, or are you going to knock something off the price, or are you going to take care of a couple things right now? Because you do have some power, because these guys don't want a bad review. Conversely, Airbnb has their own database of me, and I'm in it. And there are, anyone who's renting out their place can go and look up me and see if I got a bad review from somebody else saying, well, this guy trashed the place. So this is really interesting. That's what Uber does as well with drivers and passengers. So Airbnb may go away, but the because, you know, as a business, obviously it's competing with the hotels and the tax revenue. But I think as we move forward and people start to realize that all these companies, and there's no real good way to make money on the internet other than providing internet access. But regulation will kill these types of businesses. But there will be tons of databases where you have this credibility and you can trade stuff and buy things from people directly. I think we're going to see a lot of that. But
you have to give credit where credit is due. This actually began with eBay.
Totally. This is absolutely where it started.
eBay came up with the idea that you can buy direct from one person to another, and then they would review each other. Mm-hmm. You could say, this buyer never sent me the money, or right. This guy's a scammer,
right. Yeah, scammer. Yeah.
Or this piece of crap, he showed one picture and sent us something else, and that sort of thing. Even Craigslist doesn't do that.
Right.
You can post something in the commentaries of Craigslist, but nobody reads that stuff.
I would go a little bit beyond eBay, and I would give the porn industry... I would give them props because the porn industry is always a little bit ahead of the curve. And I think escort reviews came before eBay.
Escort reviews are one way.
No.
I never heard of customer reviews. Old Adam Curry came over the other day and tried to bang me and he couldn't get it up. I mean, that's not true.
Okay, but okay. All right. I'll take that. I just think that, all right.
Everybody wants to do this, by the way. This is one of my major pet peeves for the last 25 years. Oh, the porn industry is way ahead of everybody else. They did everything. If it wasn't for the porn industry, there'd be no VHS and Sony Betamax, which is bullcrap. The thing that made those systems work was sports recording. That's why VHS won over Beta, because it could record a whole football game and Beta couldn't.
Oh, is this true? I'd never heard this. I like this. This is a very interesting take. I never heard that.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that's the only reason, the difference. There was a quality difference with in favor of Beta,
right.
But it could only record 2 hours, and VHS was always, at the get-go, started recording with four, really? And then went to six. And Beta just fell because why would I want this when I can get this? And so they, and it was, you know, and there was also more competition. It was kind of like the iPad versus the Android pad.
And don't forget, there was also the Philips System 2000.
Oh, well, don't forget the Magnavox. And my all-time favorite was...
Those were good.
My favorite one was a guy, so I went to a, this is that era when they had all these competitors.
Yeah.
And this guy takes me aside, he said, and they had, even Technicolor had a little 8mm job that was kind of ahead of its time.
Mm-hmm.
But this guy takes me aside, he says, no, I don't get this stuff. He says, it's, he says, this is the, this, here's the future, this Sanyo V cord.
Ooh.
This is,
this wait, is, wait, where was this, this guy? Where was this?
Is it one of these shops, one of these, you know, Pacific Stereos or one of these things? Yeah, Sanyo V cord.
That's it.
You
got
the technology's better. It's easier to make. Everybody's going to it.
Everybody. Yeah. I'll. You know what? I'll take that. I think I've never heard this theory about the sports games and the length of recording. I've also always heard it was the porn industry, and I'm with you on that. I stand corrected.
But it's so rampant. It is.
It's horribly
so
rampant.
This is the main problem. And I think the way it's really done is they, you know, like the North Korean news agency, you might as well just say Langley. Hello, I'm reporting from Langley, the North Korean news agency here. Because that's how it works. They will place articles in foreign papers, foreign news reports, and then that trickles back as fact. And it's picked up by the idiots. Because, you know, it's not like this, like... You know, this is what people always say. Well, that's impossible. Well, that can't be. That conspiracy can't be true. People would talk about it. They would be known. Not everyone can keep their mouth shut.
People do talk about it. That book. If anyone would get out of their, get off their butts and read Family of Secrets.
Yep, read a book.
They would go. Oh, in fact, there's a lot of books that discuss this. It's the people that don't discuss it are the mainstream daily news media.
Yeah,
and those are the ones that have been co-opted in one way, shape, or form. Yeah. Every, you know, and there's plenty of documentation for this. If anyone doesn't believe this and thinks some sort of weird conspiracy, it's not. But the thing that's interesting is that it actually has gotten to the point where it's made all the news. It's not credible anymore.
Nothing is credible. You can't believe anything except, well, us. And we don't really have all the info. We have no staff.
All we're doing is mining what we see. And then sometimes all we do is just add logic.
Yeah.
It's like, does this logically make any sense to anybody? How hard is that to do that?
Logic. I like that.
In fact, a lot of people I know listen to this show because
Intelligence, and they listen to the show.
Well, that's true. They get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
But the public at large is logical, or they would actually be dead. You have to be logical. You know, if it's a red light and traffic is flying around, you don't illogically run into traffic. I mean, just everyone is logical. So when they see these news stories, they themselves go, geez, that doesn't make sense, but maybe it's true because it's in the New York Times. Then when they hear us, and they say, oh, I thought it was bull crap too. Before I start naming our people for today's show, I want to play a clip, which is Gwen Ifill, again, this is PBS. This is where people send lots of money to. They have lots of sponsors. They got underwriters and all this. I just want to play what I consider a corrupt report by Gwen Ifill when she discusses that idiot that we talked about earlier in the show, Aiken, and his rape, legitimate, illegitimate rape thing. And because there's a point of information here that is purposely left out. And you have to remember that Gwen is the one. She seems like a very sweet woman, by the way, and a good reporter. But she's the one who wrote the hate
geography. But she's not. She's not. That's the problem.
She might not be. She wrote the hate geography of Obama, and she's a huge Obama supporter, and this is the kind of report we get from her.
Impregnated by rape, apologized, but said he would not be forced from the campaign. The resulting uproar has pleased Democrats and enraged Republicans, including other lawmakers and fundraisers. Incumbent Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill, a Democrat, has said Republicans should accept Aiken's apology.
I think what's startling to me is that these party bigwigs are coming down on him and
saying that he needs to kick sand in the face of the Republican primary voter.
But party leaders, including Missouri Senator Roy Blunt and former Senators Kit Bond, John Ashcroft, John Danforth, and Jim Talent, all called for Aiken to step aside.
So what are they missing?
Hey, how about mentioning that the Claire McCaskill clip that went on and on and on about how they should forgive this guy and let him do his own thing? She's the guy, the person running against him.
Minor detail.
A minor detail. She's the one who said, "Yeah, let's run this idiot. Hey, why don't you guys leave him alone? I'd like to be running against him." That's never mentioned. She's like an objective observer making this kind of, that's bull crap. Mm-hmm. This is like the most slanted thing I've seen on this news hour for a long time. And it's so subtle. It was really disgusting.
And how much money do they get from the government, and how much money do people
millions.
Give them? Yeah, millions.
I'm going to show my support by donating to No Agenda. Imagine all the people who could do that. Oh yeah, that'd be fab.
No Agenda in the morning. Well, here we are on the clip show, and so we don't really have anybody to thank.
Except for Ramsey.
And we will do a complete thank you on the next show, which will be the 24th.
On Thursday.
Thursday, it will be 6:21. We'll do a complete thank you for everyone for this show and the next show. So it's going to be a little long, we hope.
Yeah.
Segment in the
that would be nice.
It'd be nice and long.
Yeah.
For the 24th, where we get to thank. So anyone who's came in with knighthoods or big donations or producerships, you'll have to wait till the Thursday show.
And also,
we appreciate all this.
I'm sure I'll have some tales from the travels. I've never been to Mexico in my life.
Oh,
yeah. So
they got great hot sauce, and I recommend using it.
Okay. All righty.
It's also a disinfectant.
Yeah. I really have no idea where Miss Mickey took me.
Okay. Well, you'll find out when you get there.
Yeah. But it's, yeah.
It's, you know, it's usually the fruit that makes you sick, by the way.
I'm not going to eat any
and
fruit.
And water, drink bottled water. Yeah. Just do yourself a favor.
It is our fifth anniversary.
You do not need dysentery.
No, not on our fifth anniversary.
No.
Where we celebrate wood.
Well, that's a good thing.
Which is what the fifth is.
Anyway.
Yeah, we appreciate everyone who supported us, even in, the pre-support we got was great, and in our absence today. But, of course, you still have something fun to listen to, and maybe a good primer to listen together with other people who are new to the concept.
Right.
Hit him in the mouth with the show. That's probably what Ramsey's put together, because that's kind of what he does.
And I want to remind people to go to Dvorak.org/NA to contribute to the Thursday show. Or you can also go to channeldvorak.com/NA. There's also noagendanation.com, and there's a button there you can push. And so also No Agenda Show, there should be a button you can get to. But if you'd help us out for the Thursday show, we'd really appreciate it.
Dvorak.org/NA.
So let's go on to part two.
And they have Hot Pockets mac and cheese now.
Oh,
yeah.
Why don't you just make something bad worse?
It's so funny. You know, so I ordered the, remember I, we got that gift card for the mac and cheese, like 12 pack. So I ordered that. And the other day, our old neighbor comes by in the morning because she said, "Oh, Mickey, I got your package." And Mickey had ordered like some makeup thing that, you know, you can't get anywhere. And so she's really excited. And, you know, so Jen drops by and they have coffee and they're yapping away. You know, it's 9 a.m. I'm sitting in the corner prepping as usual. Like I get up and I'm like, "Oh, let me see what's going on in the world. What's in C-SPAN?" I'm my usual chipper self. And then, you know, Mickey's like, "Oh, I can't wait." She opens up the box and it's the freaking mac and cheese.
Yeah.
I was Mr. Unfavorited. No, unfriended. Not good. So the Bilderberg group, what you call, John, the drinking club, is going on over there in Watford. Watford, I believe, is where Elton John is from. I think. It's kind
is
of
he
this.
Invited?
I think he's performing in the foyer, actually. And, you know, every single year, and we've looked at this. I've met a couple Bilderbergers, the current Minister of Foreign Affairs, the Secretary of State, I guess, is what you'd call him, in the Netherlands. He's the guy that I interviewed him once on the Dutch radio show where they burned the station to the ground. And he said, you're doing very important work here. You got to continue this. He was trying to like give me a clue, like, yeah, you know, this, we're really up to no good. But this Bilderberg, you know, it's like, oh, the last time was, oh, they're there. Romney's the man. The New World Order has determined Romney's going to win. Well, how'd that work out? So now I'm much more on the on the drinking club front. But this year, there must be 3,000 people out there. And it's funny because you can see now the whether some of them are, I'm sure some people are doing it intentionally. I have always suspected Alex Jones of doing this. You know, there was an actual guy in a clown suit, the clown makeup on, running around. There's, you know, there's people ventriloquists.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, the whole thing. So it makes it look like a bunch of nut jobs. True freaking nut jobs. Who really, some people have very good analysis. There's some really intelligent people there. You know, we try to give an alternative version of what's happening in the world. But what discredits us time and time again, Alex Jones is an a-hole. He goes out there and he does this stuff on mainstream television, which makes it that much harder for anyone to question any type of true conspiracy, which are the stories the mainstream, the minority mainstream media propagates, when you do things like this on the BBC. And by the way, there's no reason for him to go on the BBC. He says he's got 3 million listeners, 40 million people watch his videos. There's no reason for him to go on the BBC on a Sunday because he's just always, I mean, just listen to how this ended. It was unbelievable how he is hurting the alternative media's chances at reaching anybody, because the minute you bring up anything now, people think that this is who you are.
And right. That's why, because the establishment all doesn't right. know what to do.
Alex has this point, and it's an important one. I would have, say, 10 years ago said, listen to all this stuff. He believes that people put cancer virus in vaccine in order to create a eugenics program. That's what he believes.
We talk about medical discoveries.
And I would have said, hey, that's kind of mad and so on. And it's an interesting psychological phenomenon.
Like dismiss it.
The problem is that conspiracy theories like this are believed in.
Hey, listen, I'm here to warn people. You keep telling me to shut up. This isn't a game. Okay, our government in the U.S. is building FEMA camps. We have an NDAA where they disappear people now. You have this arrest for public safety, life in prison.
You are the worst person I've ever interviewed.
No, it's basically off with their heads, disappear
David, thank
them,
you for
away.
Being with us.
Infowars.com.
Half past 11. You're watching the
Liberty
Sunday Politics. We have an idiot
freedom
on the program
will not
today.
Stop. You will not stop
just
freedom.
20 minutes.
You will not stop the Republic. Humanity is awakening. Infowars.com. No, you guys.
I'll be looking at the week ahead with our political panel. Until then, the Sunday politics across the UK.
Think of the public isn't waking up.
So,
well, you got to give him credit.
He got the URL in, that's for sure.
Twice.
Now, so I think it's unnecessary.
You know what's true? Before you go, can I just interrupt for a second? Before you, because I want to hear what you say, but. This reminds me of that guy that has the question marks all over his suit. Remember that guy?
The Riddler?
He sold a book of hiding all this money from the government.
Oh, yeah, that guy, yeah.
And he had all these question marks all over his suit.
He had the question
I had an agent,
suit.
I won't mention his name because it's ridiculous, who said, you know what you ought to do? I know you can get a bestseller out of this because you got the same guy. You know that guy? I forgot his name. You should do something like that. This is like what Alex Jones is doing. It's just a... He's just a clown.
What? Yeah, a complete clown. I'm trying. Yeah, here's the guy. I got. Hold on. What's his name? I got him on the Googles. Free money. Matthew Lesko.
Yeah, Lesko.
You know, you could pull it off. Actually, I see if you put on the suit and the bow tie.
The bow tie. That's what you really need. That really tops it. Anyway, tell us. So, what were you thinking when you heard this? That's a. By the way. I will.
I can't take it. No.
2 years ago.
Whoa! What was that?
You can't take the clip of the day.
No. No, I can't take. I can't. I cannot accept it. I just can't
Why?
Accept that. No, I can't.
It's
I don't.
A great clip.
I don't think it's that great.
Okay.
No. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Hold it in abeyance. You got a second place.
You know, after Honorable you mention. After you like compared me to Glenn Beck. You know, that still kind of smarts a little bit. Let me give you a little more extra, or let me give the producers of the show a little more extra data. So we had this Bolivian incident, and this was essentially the setup to rile up all of South America. Let me play. This is about a minute and a half of we have Bolivia, Venezuela, Argentina. And by the way, the Venezuelan president, he's got a Devo safety dance hat on. This is a very interesting outfit he's wearing. And these are them speaking and translations. It's a little compilation of what they are saying about the president and the United States of America.
If necessary, we will close the U.S. embassy in Bolivia. We do not need the U.S. embassy. We don't need this pretext of cooperation and diplomatic relations when they come to conspire from within and from outside. The U.S. ambassador to Bolivia is gone. The U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration is gone. Surely the CIA is infiltrated all over the place.
And now we go to Venezuela.
My hand would not tremble to shut down the U.S. embassy. We have dignity. We have sovereignty. Without America, we are better off politically and democratically.
That was still Bolivia. Now it's Venezuela.
The ones who gave the order to the authorities in these countries and said young Snowden was on the plane were the CIA. According to what has happened, in Europe, the CIA is more powerful than the governments. So, who's in charge in Europe? The European governments and their people, or the CIA?
You, President of Bolivia, were held hostage for 13 hours. And now they're trying to explain all this, saying it was due to technical problems or fuel problems.
Okay, so that was the three South American countries in a row, and very interesting how they're talking about the CIA being infiltrated, how America is shit, you know. And by the way, to the chat room, you're absolutely right. Devo did not do safety dance. There was Men Without Hats, and because that's the only thing you care about, I'm logging off of the chat room because you're idiots. You're not. That's the only fact they can pick up on. I mean, I just logged out. How stupid are you? It was Men Without Hats. All right. There's clearly, and this is all Russian-based. Putin is sitting there laughing at this because
Putin's having the time of his life. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if Putin's group didn't make themselves look like the CIA pulling this off.
Oh, well, let me tell you what happened. So the Bolivian president had just had a meeting in Moscow. He's flying back from Moscow, where, you know, they have a $5 billion deal with Gazprom, which is Putin. You know, they know what side of the bread is buttered. And this whole, like, oh, they were not allowed to cross. They were forced to land. Well, here is the, and if you look on the map, they tried to land in Portugal for fueling. And Portugal, Faro Airport, I believe, could not take them for technical reasons, which is highly possible that they had to divert. But if you look at the map, they then circle around. They go to Austria. This is the tail number is Fox Alpha Bravo 001. And I'm going to let you in on a little bit of pilot humor here as you listen to this forced landing in Austria.
Control, good evening, Fox Alpha Bravo 001. Fox Alpha Bravo 001, good evening. Information Whiskey, expect ILS runway 16.
Okay, so that's the tower saying, good evening, how are you doing? Information Whiskey, that's the current weather and atmospheric conditions. Expect this runway, how are you doing?
Information Whiskey, ILS, runway 16, Foxtrot, Alpha Bravo, 001.
Do you need any assistance? Alpha Bravo 001, do you need any assistance upon landing?
So this is the Austrian flight controller saying, hey, do you guys need any assistance when you land? You know, because we know that you're, you know, presidential plane. You need anything? Anything we can do? Ice cream, you know, Twizzlers, anything we can get for you?
Not at this moment. We need to land because we are not, we cannot get a correct indication of the fuel indication. So as a precaution, we need to land.
Okay. Now, let me tell you a little bit of pilot humor. So what he said is, no, we don't need assistance. We need to land because we cannot get a correct indication of our fuel level. Therefore, we need to land as a precautionary measure.
This is a $47 million jet, which, you know, this is not like your fuel gauge in your car. And it's not just one fuel gauge. It's multiple fuel gauge, fuel pressure, fuel flow. This is very, very rare. In fact, there's two things pilots use when they want to make an unscheduled landing. Because this was an unscheduled landing. Probably because Putin said, all right, here's what we're going to do. First, I'm going to say that Anna Chapman wants to marry Snowden. That'll piss everybody off. Then I want you guys to pretend like you're being forced down. But he's not. He is requested to land. And the two things, if you need to make an unscheduled stop or some change that is not a part of your flight plan, the two things you use are, one, oh, man, there's something wrong with the fuel. We don't know. Because he didn't declare an emergency, you see. Declaring an emergency is a whole different level. He said, no, as a precautionary measure, we might have something wrong with the fuel. We want to land. The other one, which you use in smaller aircraft, and every pilot will know this, you say, yeah, we have a passenger who's sick. In other words, you know, you got someone puking in your cockpit and you want to land and you just want to get him out because it smells of puke and you want to stop. And they're both usually lies. Because you just want to convert to a different flight plan. You want to land somewhere. You were too lazy to file, etc. So this does not jive with they were not allowed to enter airspace. They were blocked. No, they did it, made an unscheduled stop, and it was their request, and it was a lie that brought them down. So this whole thing, South America, is, I think what Putin is doing is saying, okay, you want to surround everything here. You want all your rockets. You want to put everything here. You want it in. You want Syria. You got your stuff in Poland. You got all of North Africa. How about I get South America? All I'm waiting for now is for Mexico to start saying something to us.
That's, we have to put in the red book. Mexico next.
Mexico next. This is Cold War. And I think. And did you hear Bolivia, Venezuela, and Argentina? This is like all of South America is an uproar. Well, I think the Russians pretty much have deals with all of those countries.
No, it's becoming quite funny.
To us.
Now, what was the point, or was you think that this was bogative, where they came in and searched the plane for, supposedly for Snowden, but no, they were the plane for something?
Maybe they just continued with the ruse and had, look, if they really had a fuel indicator problem, then it can take quite a while to get someone out who knows this Trident jet and knows how to look at the fuel indicator. You kind of have to keep the ruse going, whatever. But they asked if they needed assistance. This is not a forced landing. This is not like someone checking. This is all a lie. None of it is true. None of it.
That's why we are
the best podcast in the world.
By the way, I want to thank, who was it, our producer, who was very, very kind. The only one, by the way, as far as I know. Oops, I'm going the wrong way here. Tyler, who sent us, he had just heard the show and sent us a flurry of emails. He said, oh, man, I got this PowerShell script and I figured it out. We can use it to vote 4,000 times. And like it was like 2 hours left for voting.
Like, yeah, really, we have to get a hold of Tyler about a month before next year's show.
Yeah.
Set up about 25 of these things. and just bomb this.
But
we
have no chance, John. We have no chance.
I think if we have enough people that will set up the script and run it overnight.
But why? I won't feel good about that. I'm not going to feel good.
I don't care. Let me tell you how I feel about
okay,
it.
Okay, please.
I'm going to give you my story.
Right. Yeah.
So there was at Comdex, you used to have this famous chili cook-off. And the initial chili cook-off.
This. Yeah.
Yeah, the first chili cook-off, I won.
Wow.
And they had professional judges, and my chili was and I won because this chili was a little, it was not a standard. It was a better tasting chili is the reason it won, and the professional judges recognized it for what it was. It was very, very good, and I do have a recipe that I distribute. I'll put it in the next newsletter. So the chili. The guys, the competitors, mostly one guy from Texas who was also a columnist who was pissed about this. He demanded that they have the judging have a People's Choice Award because he believed that people were over at his booth telling him what a great chili he made. And since he was Texas, he knew what chili was, and I won from California.
But the judges, of course, were stupid and didn't know what they were talking about.
Yeah. So the next year they had the professional judges and they had the People's Choice Awards. And everybody who got into the event, they had three coins and they could go around tasting chili and drop a coin into the buckets. So I hired two models that were showgirls to cajole.
Hey, wait a minute. Let's back up for a second. So you're in Vegas. You're like, I'm going to win this. Do you then go to a Vegas theater, or do you go to a strip club to find these? Where'd you find the girls?
Just modeling agencies.
You called a modeling agency?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I hired two gorgeous 6-foot showgirls and had them in showgirl regalia. They were pretty. But I also had them. And the joke of it, of course, at the very end. Well, anyway, so I had the two girls at the booth, and they were, and also greeting when people came in. She says, "Oh, you should vote for Dvorak. You should throw all your coins into Dvorak's pot." And so they just, you know, sweet talk people into voting for my chili for People's Choice Award.
Right.
Which, of course, I won. And I had the two girls, arm in arm, escort me up the steps to accept the award.
I am Googling now. Is there any evidence of this? Are there any pictures of you and the showgirls?
There are a lot of people talking. It was a little buzz. It was a buzz about it. But I'll tell you this. The guy from Texas, and the other people know who I'm talking about. The guy from Texas was just livid because it was his idea. I wouldn't have won that year. That's the joke. The Chili's, they had changed the judging a little bit, and I realized when I tasted all the Chili's that had won by the professional judges that I did not amp up the ancho flavor, because apparently whoever these judges were, they just love the flavor of ancho, which is a certain chili that has a very distinct taste. Commonly in chili, but I won the People's Choice Award.
Of course.
So yeah, that's how I feel about these things.
Okay, well, then I have an idea. Instead of getting all these scripts running next time, why don't we just hire two girls and we'll have them, you know, we'll set up a sequence where for every vote, every time you vote, and you have to send us your proof of voting, and you can go back every single day, or for every 1,000 votes or whatever it is, they'll take off a piece of clothing and we'll post the picture.
Hey, that compared to bots, that idea is not going to get the job done. I like it.
I don't know.
We'll do both. A double hit. We'll come in from both sides. We'll come in with the bots. We'll come in with the girls. Can't lose.
We'll come in with the bots. We'll come in with the girls. We're going to rock it.
Real credits is what we give away on this program. So associate executive producer and executive producer, you can put it on your IMDb, in your email signature, on your resume. And unlike the fake phonies in Hollywood, we'll actually vouch for you if someone wants to know if you actually were a producer on a real show. And I think that this qualifies as one. All of you other slaves out there, please go and propagate it.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
World order. Say it with me now.
Shut up,
ladies. And I did want to say a big in the morning to brand new human resource in Gitmo Nation. Her name is Wednesday Kane. Born at 7:07 p.m. last night, just in time to catch Sunday's show. She's a month early, but she couldn't wait to get out there and hit people in the mouth.
She was born on Saturday, named Wednesday.
Yeah. I know. I love it. It's awesome.
So why are we named Wednesday? I don't know. My parents were hippies.
Yeah.
So let's play. So Canada's having a big, you know, we lost a couple of Canadian listeners over the last few days. I saw one. Yeah, one tweeted me saying, "You suck. I hate your show now."
Why? And anyway, what did we do?
You never say. You can't tell with Twitter because they don't have enough time to express themselves.
I ran out of characters. Sorry. But so what do we suck?
I clicked on him and I found he's a Canadian guy. And so I said, oh, well, of course, then I immediately banned him. And
this is a policy, John. When people say you suck, you just block them. Is that what you do?
Oh yeah, well, no, because I don't use Twitter for that kind of thing. I use my email. So
right, you block them there too. You block everything and everybody.
Yeah. I don't need it. I already know I suck. So it's redundant.
You will obey. You will obey. You will obey.
Hey, big up to Gitmo Nation. What's Iceland? What is the Gitmo Nation volcano? That's what it is.
Glacier. How about glacier?
No, the BS filter
yeah, volcano
has it,
is probably
a volcano.
Yeah.
So big up to the people of Gitmo Nation Volcano, who yesterday had a referendum vote. Now, if you'll recall, they had the whole country melted down because Icelandbanksky, or something like that, had lent all this, had the savings accounts for citizens of Gitmo Nation East, the United Kingdom, and Gitmo Nation Lowlands, which, of course, was a total scam. And people had these internet savings accounts with really high interest. Yeah, like, you know, hello, if it's too good to be true, it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. So the bank fell apart. And then what the international bankster said is, well, listen, slaves there in Iceland, you're going to have to pay it back. You'll just have to have austerity measures and all kinds of things. You'll have to pay it back. And they went, we don't think so. And so then, you know, they brought in some new shills into the government, and everyone's too afraid to sign off on it because they know if anyone in government would say, all right, let the human resources work for 30 years to pay it back, they would get killed. So they were too chicken shit to do it, excuse the language. So they held a referendum, and big ups to the human resources there. They voted no. Like, no, we're not going to pay that back. Screw you. And now, of course, everyone's freaking out. So because the governments of the Netherlands and the United Kingdom already paid back the money to the people who invested, which
I don't understand. This is like getting, you know, to me, this is like those scams that took place some years back during the modem era, where you would call up a website, because that's the way you did it directly, and it would be a scam, and it would redirect a call to Romania, which is a per-minute call of $100
a
minute.
Yeah, you get a huge phone bill.
You get a huge bill for $30,000, and then the phone company says, hey, there's nothing we can do about it, international tariffs, it's an agreement, we can't do anything about it. So you're basically, they're all part and parcel of a scam. Take your money, and it's like, you know, when it's bull crap, it's illegal. The whole thing was illegal. It's unconscionable that they would still try to. Well, let's see if we can jerk them around some more. Right. I'm glad they did that.
Right. Well, so, of course,
just say no.
You will recall that when this thing first came down, what was the first thing that Gitmo Nation East, Gordon Brown at the time, what did he say? You remember? As I recall.
No.
He said they were they were terrorists. Don't you remember that? He called
them.
He said they're terrorists, and therefore they have to be locked out of everything. You can't do trade with them. I'm invoking the terrorism law. That's the first thing he did. He called Iceland a terrorist state. That was his way of kicking their ass temporarily.
This is the problem that we have with this whole terrorism crap.
Terror. It's terrorism.
Squirrel.
Terrorism.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it could just happen.
By the way,
again.
Eric DeShill suggests, and I think this is a good name, which would be Gitmo Nation Puffin.
Puffin?
Yeah, but if you go to Iceland, I don't know if you've ever been there, but all they eat is puffin. They have puffin burgers, and they have roast puffin, and then there's puffin steaks. And
All right, let's have a referendum, shall we?
Fried puffin.
What is puffin?
Puffin is the cutest. Look it up in the Book of Knowledge. Puffin is the cutest bird in the world, but it's like the pigeon. It's like the pigeon of Iceland.
No,
there's millions of.
I'm not going to eat a puffin. It doesn't.
It's beautiful. It's a beautiful bird.
No, I don't want to eat no puffin.
But they grab them and they choke them. They choke them and then they rip.
They choke them.
They choke the puffin and then they grind them into meat.
Hey, these guys are terrorists. Wait a minute. Can't you just, like, kill the puffin humanely? You have to choke him?
Well, I don't know that.
Hey, John. After the show, I'm going to go choke the puffin.
Yeah, go choke the puffin. Go choke the puffin on your own time.
That's it. Gitmo Nation, choke the puffin. Change the BS filter. We have a new name.
But this whole thing is kind of interesting, but it reminds me of when I used to be a factory worker. During my college days. And I realize at this point, and I think this is true, even though I believe the two of us are clean and sober, to say the least, generally. But Well, I was working this international harvester for a while, and I worked one whole summer. And I was working. I could never keep up with the demands of this simple job. There was a sub-assembly that I was responsible for making, and I had to make this thing.
As in submarine or a
no a sub-assembly. So this was part of the brake system, and it was like a little. There was a device that had a couple of hoses on it, and they had to put a thing here and a thing there. And you had to drill out this. And you had to put a cap on it. Right. It's about 8-9 step process, and I had to make these things all day.
Right.
That's the point at which I learned that if you want to work in factories in the United States, and I always advise this to people, or factories anywhere, learn to become either a receiving clerk or an inspector.
Inspector, right.
And the inspector is the best job there is. And it doesn't take much. And it's a good job anyway. Right, so I'm doing this thing. No, I wasn't high. It turns out there was a big drug bust in both the General Motors plant and also at the International Harvester place where that these guys were strung out on amphetamines. And that's the only – and because I could never keep up with the quota. The guy was always being – yeah, you're way behind. You're thousands of units and you're not done.
Yeah, that's why you got to take the cokes.
So these guys were all – it was amphetamines, beans. And so these guys – so
what did you call them?
Beans. Benzedrine.
Beans, man. Bennies.
So they used to – apparently these guys were down in these things all day. They were just completely wasted on drugs, and they could get the production numbers up.
Right.
And I think that this is – and if we look at it, they always – the United States is laced with cocaine and all kinds of other performance-enhancing drugs because there's so many demands on the workers. That's why our productivity is so high. But at the same time, let's face reality about this stuff. If this is the way it is, legalize drugs for God's sake. All right.
Yeah.
Done.
Right. Cool. I should try some of that.
Why?
I've never done coke in my life, ever.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would avoid it. With your personality?
Well, that might be funny.
I would avoid
it. I haven't done E. I haven't done coke. I weed. That's the only thing I've ever done. I think in college I snorted a diet pill.
But it is very troubling that this is going on. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. This is all just,
there's a lot of stuff going on all around the place. I mean, one of the things, riots everywhere that are not getting reported. In fact, when they're getting reported by their own people, I have a clip from Van Catt about, which is just so bogus because, there's riots all over France. And the reasons are pretty obvious to everybody who just – all you have to do is ask people why they're rioting. But play this French riot thing because this is not another unreported situation in the U.S.
Well, we played a clip, I think, 2 weeks ago when this all started.
They pulled drivers from their cars and stole the vehicles, and they burned down a school and a youth center. Dozens of young men rioted in a troubled district in northern France this week. The police department in Amiens says at least 16 officers were injured after rioters lobbed stones at them. Well, about 100 young men were involved. It wasn't clear what exactly caused the unrest. French Prime Minister Jean-Marc Ayrault has promised to deal with troublemakers with a firm hand.
It was
a troubled neighborhood.
They didn't know what caused the disturbance?
No, I have no idea.
This is the French reaction to Hollande being full of crap.
Yeah.
If the American mentality wasn't so passive and we were like the French, this would have happened within the first year of Obama's administration when he didn't close Gitmo and he didn't immediately end the war and all the other things he promised. Take that to the bank. And then doing nothing and then going off and killing Americans without due process, we'd be rioting. But we don't do that. The French riot at the drop of a hat when somebody lies to them like Hollande did.
Yep.
That's all it is. And, we don't know what's causing this unrest.
So how long do you think this will last before it happens here? Do you think we'll ever get any unrest here in the United States of Gitmo?
We had a lot of this in the years leading up to the 1970 economic downturn that lasted a decade. And a lot of it was triggered by the Vietnam War because people were, you had a draft, and so people were bitching about that. And then there was the Watts riots, which was amazingly huge, and the Detroit riots, but these were black-on-black riots, those were. And then you had the student riots. There's lots of rioting that used to take place. That's all been deconstructed by the government, locked down, and there's been methodologies put in place that that have pacified the whole country, celebrity worship and all the rest of it. It's very complex, very well done. There is no chance. There'll be something will break out once in a while, but then the propaganda machine will come out like they, you know, like they've done with these vets they're picking up and get it, everybody, a bug in everyone's mind to think a certain way. Oh, these are terrible people, and they're, you know, they're anti-American, they're terrorists. I mean, we got the whole thing set up so you can't do a thing. We're locked down, and the terrorism thing is part of it, and so is the TSA.
I do need to bring you some more reports from this dinner, because there were some other interesting things we discussed, particularly with Professor Pennebaker, I kind of eased into it, kind of let him know that I had read his book. And I said, this performative, that was really quite fantastic. And he's just launched into it. He told everyone, because no one knew what I was talking about except Mickey. And then so he explains performatives. And for those of you who don't know, it's where typically a politician will say things like, "Let me be clear." And then whatever he says after that doesn't matter, because he already told the truth, because he just wanted to be clear. Didn't want to tell you the truth. He was just.
He wanted to be clear. Now, my favorite one, I was thinking about this the other day. And I realized the Kennedys had a distinct one that caught on for a while, and then it kind of dropped off. And it's Ted Kennedy used it, but John Kennedy used to say it all the time. And it was this: "Let me say this about that."
That's the best one, right?
I think that's the best one.
Let me say this about that. Yeah, that's a good one.
Let me say this about that. But what you're going to say next is like could be anything.
Well, here's I'll just give an example, a recent one from Stephen Harper of the Kennedys.
And the prime minister is also defending his actions following new revelations in the Senate expenses scandal. Here's what he had to say when asked about the payment between his former chief of staff, Nigel Wright, and conservative senator Mike Duffy.
First of all, let me be very clear on this. I've been clear repeatedly.
It's double whammy. I've been clear repeatedly. Let me be clear about this.
Learned of this on May the 15th.
I learned of this May the 15th. He doesn't stop. It's all performative.
As soon as I learned of this, I made this information available to the public, to the people of Canada.
So that's basically what it is. And then I forget who it was. One of our producers said the presidential oath is essentially the biggest performative, because it says, "I here do by solemnly swear that to the best of my ability," like, okay, thanks. Good night. Go home. It doesn't matter what you say after that. Pennebaker, I thought he was going to shit himself. He's like, "Oh my God, I never thought of that one." So now I'm on the inside, right? Now I'm like, hey, this is good. Tell me some more. I wanted to get into his research, which hasn't been published yet. And he has computer programs, and he does a lot with pronouns. So he has computer programs that calculate the use of certain words, but it's the words like I, am, we, are, that, there, they, these types of things. And he has several proven theorems that he can point to. And the first thing he told me about was he can also see if a writer was male or female, and he's done some very interesting studies to see how good playwrights were at writing male or female characters, etc. Just to give an example, all of the female characters in Quentin Tarantino movies are written as extreme males, as so are those of Shakespeare. And he has studied all the American presidents. And he said about Barack Obama, he said, it's unbelievable. He said, every single American president is 100% macho male. Barack Obama could not be more female. He says, it's like a woman is writing his stuff. I said, Valerie Jarrett? He didn't get it. But he says, the way the president talks, speaks, it's all very soft, a little wishy-washy. He says, but he's doing it with scientific, you know, with word counts and
yeah, there are a lot of, there's actually a bunch of computer programs that attempt to do this, and you can run, I've run professional writers, copy through a bunch of these systems, and you can find, you can't always spot a female writer, but you can see them trending to female. Most professional writers are all trained similarly, so the femaleness comes from a professional. Mm-hmm. Professionals have a professional style that they develop from training and editing. Right. And they tend to be kind of mostly, if not all, male, even if they're women.
And
but normal people that just write away, they're just writing naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier with them. I think it's harder with professionals.
Of course, if a professional is trying to, a great writer can write a woman's character the way a woman thinks. You know, I think that would be the hallmark of a great writer.
I don't think so. I don't think that's the hallmark of a great writer, being able to become a woman.
No. You're right.
I'm not even sure
you're right.
Many great writers have ever accomplished what you just said.
Well, he has done this exact study.
And okay, well, what great writers have done it?
Well, I don't have that information handy, but if you look at it, it doesn't. I would say that it may be challenging to write like a woman if you don't know what you're doing, to actually write from a female perspective and for it to come out in the computer analysis as a woman, but sometimes it may not be necessary. Ergo, Quentin Tarantino's characters, his female characters, are all extremely male, and his movies seem to do fine. So it's just a point that you can distinguish between men and women in their writing in general. Is that fair?
I'd say it's partially true. I think if you want to make the argument, I'm not going to argue against it, but it's still,
it's what his research shows and his research.
Okay. Well, he's probably coming up with that, but I don't know if he's studying just professionals. He's studying.
No, not at all. No. In fact, far from it. And the reason why he does this is the ultimate reason is to see that if you he's all about writing certain things. If you had traumatic experiences and you can actually heal yourself. So this is all just side research, which, by the way, is now going to Bing. This is very interesting because these guys all got consulting gigs. It's very interesting. So Bing, it looks like the search engine is going to be looking at some fun things, the way things are written. But of course, these guys are vibing on Twitter and all these incredible data sets that we have. And what he's done is he said, if you go and look at the pronouns, particularly the use of I words that every single president has used before warfare in speeches, etc., you can see that right before they are about to attack or do something, their use of I goes down significantly. He said George W. with Iraq, Senior with the first Gulf War, Nixon. I mean, he's gone back and studied that. And I said, well, how about Obama? He says, no, we haven't really done that research. So we have to.
I bet she's going to find a little contrariness there, because if you remember, we've spotted this when they got bin Laden, it was I.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very I oriented.
Or
he rarely says
or, and this is where I'm going. It didn't actually happen. No intention.
That's actually a good one, too.
Yeah, that's the way I see it. Let me see if I, first let me do second half of the show stuff, because people are requesting it and they feel that I'm lacking a little bit.
Are you going to talk, can I make a wild guess?
You can try.
Are you going to talk about the aliens that are bodyguards of Obama?
That was pretty funny. He was a shapeshifter.
Yeah, shapeshifter. Yeah.
That was a couple weeks ago. We know he's got shapeshifters. What am I going to do? Sit here and pound it?
Shapeshifter.
What?
Michelle Obama.
Possibly. No, I mean, we
just
know.
Get back on that diet.
No, we know that they're shapeshifters. We know that they employ them. This is not new.
You were going to do.
This is so funny. So, just to prove my point, that Twitter, hey, Andy Carvin. Hello, Andy, @NAcarvin. Pay attention to this, dude.
Earlier this year, 500 or so Twitterers received tweets from someone with the handle @JamesMTitus, who posed one of several generic questions. How long do you want to live to, for example? Or, do you have any pets? @JamesMTitus was cheerful and enthusiastic, kind of like those people who comment on the weather and then laugh heartily. Perhaps because of that good nature, or perhaps because of his inquiring spirit and interest in others, @JamesMTitus was able to strike up a fair number of continuing conversations. Only thing is, there is no James M. Titus. He, or it, is a bot, a software program designed to engage actual humans in social networks. He grew out of a contest.
Okay, so this is a bot, right? Which I think a lot of these things are. And if they're not bots, then they're then they're systems that are controlled by one person who controls multiple personalities.
Yeah, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, where do you think this bot was created, John?
Probably Washington D.C. someplace.
No.
There is a social bot, a contest staged by a group of techies calling themselves the Web Ecology Project. Tim Huang is the director of the Web Ecology Project. He joins us from Berkeley, California.
I said Berkeley.
You did? I didn't hear you say that.
Yeah.
Of course. It's Spook Central. It's Berkeley, it's Pennsylvania, and it's Arlington. This is where it's all coming from.
New listeners of the show, we've determined based on the Ling Ling thing and the woman that was captured outside of Iran, that Berkeley has become some sort of a training ground, especially the School of Journalism, for various CIA operatives.
Let me now. I have something that'll just be so much fun to listen to. As you know, I'm always out there looking for what's going on in the world of choo-choo trains.
All aboard! Trains good, planes bad.
Woo-hoo! Now, I subscribe to the RSS feed of the U.S. High Speed Rail Association, who have their own little website. Now, this, of course, is the shill organization that is trying to steal all this money to do all this crazy crap for trains that we don't need, which will only benefit Berkshire Hathaway and other people who actually Bill Gates apparently owns a large chunk of the railroad as well, of some I don't know which freight outfit he owns.
CTX,
CSX, maybe CSX.
CSX, maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
So they've got this clip homepage, and Andy Kuntz, who he looks exactly the way his name sounds, Andy Kuntz, is on Fox Business, I think, with the Varney Show. Is that Fox Business?
Maybe Stuart Varney. Yes. I don't know.
And so they have this listed as Andy Kuntz promoting high speed rail. I'm like, okay, this will be a puff piece, but it's the biggest fail in the world. And I can't believe that these guys are so brazen to actually put this on their website like it's a good score for high-speed rail, because I have to say this Stuart Varney guy, who's a Brit, totally nails the guy, and it's just one hilarious moment after another. And you can hear the entire elitist agenda from the get-go.
Good to be here.
Here's where I'm coming from. You cannot build a high-speed rail system in the United States. It will take you decades, if not a half century. And that delay adds to the cost, making it wildly over-expensive. And you say...
Well, it took us 40 years to build our interstate highway system. It's a big infrastructure project. It's the 21st century. We need to do it, and we need to get going on it.
We need to do it. We just need to do it. Shut up. We need to do it. We got to get going on it. This is how he starts off. I'm like, this will be interesting.
I can't believe they keep up on this. I mean, the fact that this high-speed rail, ridiculous.
Listen to Varney, because he has all of our talking points. No, he's very good. He has all of our talking points.
So you agree with me that you can't build it within a period of decades, literally. And I presume you also agree with him that the longer the delay, the greater the expense. And therefore, we cannot afford it.
Well, we have to build it. I mean, I don't know what else we're going to have for transportation in 20 years from now.
Well, what do you mean? This is already a done deal. We have to build it.
We have to build it. Why?
Yeah, we have to build it. You know, I got the president. I got O'Biden. I got George W. Obama. Everyone's on board. What are you talking about? We have to build it. What's your problem, Varney?
What's wrong with the highways?
What? Oh, I'm sorry.
System. What's wrong with
that? They're dependent on oil that's spiraling out of control in price.
So your position depends entirely on the ever-rising cost of fuel, which you say we cannot afford, but we can afford to build a wildly expensive high-speed rail system that will take decades to put in place.
So this guy is actually saying it's because of the spiraling cost of oil that we have to build trains, which apparently run on... water.
The magic.
Yeah, total magnetic magic or something like that.
Really?
It's actually would cost, the entire national system would cost about one quarter of what we've spent on the interstate highway system. So It's actually not wildly expensive. It's a big infrastructure project covering 17,000 miles. Of course it's going to be expensive. Anything we do that size is going to be expensive.
Okay. Do I have to pay for it? There was a proposal to put a high-speed rail system in place in Florida. The government of Florida said, no, we're not going to do it because we can't afford it and we don't want to pay for it. And you say?
Well, if we want a system, we have to pay for it. We have to pay for airports. We have to pay for roads. I mean, we're paying for all that. We need to do this, and this is how we're going to move the nation into the 21st century.
Can you believe that this is the guy who's the CEO?
Is this the best they can do?
I know, and they have this on the website like it's genius.
I could do a better job.
In your sleep, with one eyebrow tied behind your back. This is crazy.
Of course we have to pay for it.
Of course we have to pay for it.
Is there no cost which is too expensive?
I don't see that it's too expensive. I mean, when you figure out the amount of mobility you get per dollar spent, it's a much greater bargain than roads or airports combined.
Wait a minute, come on. How many billions of dollars was it going to be at first estimate to go from Tampa, St. Pete to Orlando? How many billions?
The first estimate and the final estimate was about $2.9 billion.
So now it gets very interesting because now Varney starts to trap him. And the guy actually falls right into the trap, which really explains why this high-speed rail will never get built in our lifetime and that it'll be too expensive if they really continue down this road. He does a good job of trapping the guy.
$2.9 billion for just that relatively short stretch. Right,
but we've spent four times that much on I-4, or the interstate between those, that little short stretch.
Yeah, but it's in place. We've got it.
Well, we spent the money.
How
we
do you
built
know?
It.
Well, we spent the money. We've got to spend the money. We've got to spend the money.
How long would it take to build Tampa, St. Pete to Orlando? A decade?
Probably about 2 to 3 years.
No. You cannot be serious, sir. You cannot.
Absolutely,
be.
You can.
Every lawyer in Florida will jump on this and say, not across my land. You haven't compensated me enough.
So here's where he traps him.
It's not anyone's land. It's down the interstate. That was the easiest system because it was the interstate of the highway, I-4.
And you're not going to interrupt some lizard or some tortoise or some bird that flies overhead?
It's already a transportation corridor, so that was an easy setup. That was the easiest one in America.
See what an idiot the guy is? He's actually tilting his hand by saying, well, this is why we started off with the easy ones, because we can show some wins within 2 years, and the rest will take 100 years to build because everyone's going to like try and stop it. I think Varney's genius in this. Really did a good job.
Yeah, Varney's pretty good. I've seen him a couple of times. They're grooming him to perhaps get a Fox News show.
Oh, really?
He's in Fox Business, and they bring him over once in a while. You know, they got him and Napolitano. They're kind of queued up because they got the Glenn Beck spot opening, and they're rearranging other people. They're going to move
let
on.
Me
a
just,
of
let me
years.
Just give you the final blow because he really nails the guy at the end.
$291 billion worth.
So he's talking about China, you know, like $291 billion in the hole. This is what you want for the United States.
Of debt for the Chinese high-speed rail system. One Chinese professor describes it as worse than the subprime crash is coming to China because of this.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we're spending five times that on a war that we're not even getting anything out of it. We're not getting a rail system. We're not getting a transportation system out of that money.
I'm sorry. I've wasted so much time in this interview. That's where you're coming from. You're saying that because we spent, what, $1 trillion in Iraq, that we're spending that to secure the oil, we should be spending that on high-speed rail. Is that your argument?
What I'm saying is that we have gone into debt to do a war, which we're not going to get any benefit of. China is going into debt to build a...
He nails him to the wall. But go ahead. Go look at the U.S. High-Speed Rail Association. It's on their homepage. And it says,
what are they thinking?
Andy Kuntz promotes high-speed rail on Fox. Good job, Andy. There'll be a little something extra in your paycheck today.
Next time, put him on MSNBC where they'll play the game.
Yeah, really. It's like, how stupid can you get to put him on with this guy? I thought it was great.
And then show it.
Yeah.
And then I'd be paying money.
Promote it.
You know, maybe you should take this off. Can you take it out of the archives? We got a few extra.
I'd be doing a DMCA request takedown from Google. No, instead, what is this, the Brilliant Hill and Knowlton? I mean, did they change PR firms?
What this, I'll tell you what it is. You want to know what it is?
Yeah, please.
No, Hill and Knowlton is still doing it, but here's what happens. This is classic public, and anyone out there who runs a corporation that uses these agencies will say, yep, Dvorak's right. They start you off with the heavy hitters and the big fees every month, and then very slowly they, oh, you start bringing in the
interns. Yeah, you get the interns on the job.
Now, yes. I think Dorothy, she's new, but she's really talented. She just came out of Cornell, and she'll be able to handle you, no problem.
Cornell.
The bill stays the same. That's a bonehead.
You're so right. It's so right. They got the guys who did the pitch come in, and they roll out for probably on an account like this, they probably do 6 months, maybe a little longer.
At probably $1 million a month.
At least. And that's excluding costs and, like travel and hookers and stuff. Fantastic. Just, I love it. Great job. So I don't know where Andy Kuntz came from. But he's not doing a very good job. He's kind of making our argument for us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, we don't make the argument that much anymore. I think we beat it to death. It's so obvious. But it's kind of, now it's just falling apart on its own. Typical.
Ready. All clear. Resume normal activity.
I like that line. Resume normal activity, citizen. Well, they're not citizens. I didn't say that. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, that's the future, ladies and gentlemen.
All right, aliens.curry.com. An actual picture of an alien. This is a Portuguese website. Alien, are you going there?
I'm just writing down something for the...
No, go before the chat room does. You'll lose out. Okay. Aliens.curry.com. Go, 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 go.
Yeah, I'm typing as fast as I can.
Hurry up. You're going to lose out. You'll never get it.
I hit it. I'm hitting it. There it is. I got it. I got it just in time. This is a guy's butt.
That's Angela Merkel. They took these pictures on her vacation. How awesome is that?
That's pretty awesome.
And she's angry. Because that's only for the celebrities, she says. You shouldn't be doing that to politicians.
Yeah, they got her butt. She has her butt hanging out.
She's shape-shifting.
I like the guys. Here's the English version. In the cover of her white bathrobe, Merkel took off her swimwear calmly and exposed her saggy and fat buttocks to the masses.
Whoops. Awesome, right?
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah, I thought you'd like it.
Very funny. Ho, yeah. You got
it. Meanwhile, in Australia, and we thought it was bad with the BBC.
A national inquiry into child sex abuse has opened in Australia, with more than 5,000 people expected to testify about abuse in places like churches, sports clubs, orphanages, and detention centres.
I mean, what? How is this not front page news everywhere? 5,000 people are going to testify? Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's much more.
Prime Minister Julia Gillard warned Australians they'll be confronted with some very uncomfortable truths. She said the Royal Commission now underway is an important moral moment for Australia. Well, let's go live to the BBC's Nick Bryant in Sydney. Nick, this doesn't go away. It gets worse. Is Australia prepared for what's about to hit it on this issue?
Well, according to some child sexual abuse experts that I've been listening to this afternoon, no. You mentioned the figure 5,000 people expected to testify before this public inquiry. They're called Royal Commissions here. But child sex abuse experts saying the number could be nearer to 100,000 people.
100,000 people, John? What is going on there in Australia?
Apparently a lot of
buggery.
A lot of buggery.
That's frightening, man. That's outrageous. 100,000.
Well, interesting to see how that shakes out.
But it's sports clubs.
Everything. It sounds like everything except a grocery store.
As the Royal Commission goes around the country hearing evidence, it's thought that many more people might come, which is one of the reasons why the head of the Commission has said that they're not going to be able to produce the report that has been asked of them by the Australian government by the deadline, and that's the end of 2015.
So they can't even write up all the cases for the next 2 years? That's how rampant it is.
Huh.
Well, we got to chop some heads off, people.
This is going to be such a difficult process. They want to hear from so many people, and they want to give them the time to tell their stories, that it's going to take a lot longer than that.
Nick, what is now emerging about the moral compass of Australia?
It's broken. It's spinning like Gilligan's Island, like the minnow.
On so many issues like this.
Issues.
That's a big question. I mean, what led to this inquiry being set up in the first place last November was allegations directed against the Roman Catholic Church. So there actually concealed evidence of paedophile priests. And that followed many years of allegations against the Catholic Church. Indeed, the last Pope, when he made a visit to Australia, had to apologize to victims of child sex abuse. But the fear is, Nick, that the problem goes much wider than that. That there's been child sex abuse in other institutions, boarding schools, orphanages, detention centres, sports and recreational clubs. So that's why this wide-ranging Royal Commission...
Equestrian facilities.
You know, here's the thing. You know, maybe the Roman Catholic Church thing in all areas was just the tip of the iceberg or a distraction or a lightning rod. Because as we saw in Pennsylvania at Penn State with that guy, there was no church related to anything. It was just a bunch of, you know, kids learning how to play football and then having to deal with this pervert. And then it turns out, and there was a lot of, you know, there's a lot of evidence that there was numerous people involved. They arrested a couple of them. And then it's possible the judicial system, as you pointed out in Holland and elsewhere, has got this going on. Maybe the whole Catholic thing is just a lightning rod to keep the real picture, which is apparently in Australia, since there's not really too many Catholics or that I know of. It's an Anglican country, as far as I can tell. It blew by rather quickly, and they said, wait a minute, it's just everywhere. We got 100,000 people that are going to testify. Maybe it's just a cultural thing. It's completely out of control.
Well, I think that it's probably the people who are supposed to protect the children, you know, the Child Protective Services, I would say.
Yeah, and Child Protective Services, by the way, is a really bunch of bad actors, and especially in your state, where the notorious...
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Texas and Child Protective Services is like a nasty operation. Check it out. Look into it.
Yeah. Hey, guys, I hear you guys suck. Can I come and talk to you? Give me something great before we get out of here. I mean, that sucked. I'm sorry.
Let's play. Here's an interesting. Play Burstyn. So they had this S.E. Cup. This woman who's on MSNBC.
Yeah, she's kind of like the token right winger.
Token right winger. And she was on C-SPAN interviewing some millennial kid who was just could not stop talking about himself and what he thinks the future is for millennials. And it was pretty stupid. But play the Burstyn Cannot Stop Talking clip two.
And how has growing up in the midst of what's essentially been a 10-year war on terror, how has that shaped the millennial viewpoint?
It's made this generation realize that we're part of an interdependent global world. This is really the first global generation who's cognizant of the rest of the world being deeply related to us. You may have been able to, in some ways, live under a rock in previous generations and be disconnected from the rest of the world and think about, you know, America only or your country only. But I think we recognize that, and I think...
It's bull crap. I mean, World War II and in fact, most of this globalization stuff began before World War I, which was another thing that made us real. He's full of shit.
It was kind of okay. It was an okay end. I just wanted to have a little effect.
I like it.
We don't use it enough. Wow, all right. Ramsey Kane, thank you very much for putting together this clip show for episode 610. We'll be back live streaming on Thursday for 611. And
611. Yeah, that's a good donation number.
Yes. Well, I'm sure you'll be sending out a newsletter regarding that.
Yes, newsletters will be continuing.
And thank you all very much for your support. Thank you for listening. Thanks for letting us take this little break. What did you do, John, exactly while you were gone?
I went to Port Angeles.
Oh, nice. Oh, we both celebrated some wood then.
Yes.
Hey-o.
Alder.
Yeah.
You're celebrating oak.
Yes. It's been that long you're celebrating oak? Holy moly.
Well, you said it's wood.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So I'm actually back. I'll be back, I think, Tuesday. So plenty of time to catch up on what's going on, to parse through the stuff, because it's what we do, so you don't have to, particularly watching C-SPAN and reading legislation. Until then, from south of the border, in the morning, everybody, I'm Adam Curry.
And from northern Silicon Valley or North Pacific Northwest, I don't know. I'm John C. Dvorak.
We'll talk to you on Thursday live right here on No Agenda.
The best podcast in the universe.
Local police are being told to look out for suspicious behavior around public facilities. Picture taking. Map drawing. Evasive driving.
Dvorak.org/NA.